Episode 44 with Paul Ravella and Alex Bush. In today's episode, I sit down with Paul and Alex and chat about what it looks like to be a coach during this time. We discuss strategies to implement, whether you're staying within striking distance of a show, or you're choosing or using this time as a time of stepping back and kind of looking into maybe next year or the year after for your show. We also discuss considerations and strategies that other coaches should be implementing to stay ahead of the curve and show up for their clients. For those of you who are coaches, please listen in as these are both guys doing it right and know how to get the job done. And if you're a competitor, there's so many insights to be gained from this episode. So again, this lines up so well with last week's episode with Sue and Chanel speaking on the behalf of a competitor during this time. This week we dive into what it looks like to be a coach during this time. So if you love the episode and would like to support the podcast and myself, I would ask for you to please head over to iTunes or Apple Podcasts and leave the podcast a 5-star review and tell a friend if you can. If you're here from Instagram, what's up? Share a screenshot of the podcast on your story if you enjoyed it, and be sure to tag myself at Austin Current. Be sure to tag Paul Ravella at Paul Ravella, and be sure to tag Alex at Alex Bush _. Enjoy the conversation.
I'm getting my ass kicked in this beard game. You guys are killing me.
Oh, shit. I just trimmed mine up a shitload, too.
I'm in a beard off with my one of my coaches. So I'm until the virus is over, until we're free, I'm growing it.
Yeah, what's the longest it's been?
In 2018, I let it grow pretty long when I got on stage because it's all white now, and it's like it makes me look way older than I am. So I thought it was cool, you know, like yeah. So I'm gonna dye it though when it gets longer.
Yeah, you got to leave some wisdom. You know, I think that's why they have that product that they you know the touch of gray or whatever. I think that.
I consider this a competitive advantage because who are you going to hire? A 25-year-old slick coach or some guy that's got some experience?
That's right. That's right. I think the same goes for the beard though.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Apparently I'm in a tundra here. This the sun.
You are.
Yeah. You got to see, this is the first rule. I have a ring light. You got to have the light facing you. First rule of.
Well, the first rule is also not to share 300 square feet of workspace with your.
That is true too.
With your partner and to
be able to. You guys aren't in the same room, are you?
No.
Well, not us. My wife here.
I got you.
Nothing to do with the workflow.
I built a garage to work in.
Yeah, it's just there's only so much room, so many places to put a desk here. So.
But what time is it where you live? Where are you?
I'm in Denver, so it's 8 a.m. where I am.
I was gonna say the sun seems really low there. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's 8 a.m. here, so sun's just starting to peek over the slowly but surely being built apartment complex next to me, which I'm sure you'll hear. They like to just, as soon as I start podcasting, they just start to saw steel. So this is what I get. So the plan for today, man, to the both of you are, you know, I respect both of you so much as coaches and also just as competitors in general. And so I recently had, it was yesterday, which is going to launch this week or the week, you know, prior to this one launching essentially. And you guys is going to come just after that. So basically my objective was to basically allow for the competitors to speak on behalf of the competitor. And I asked questions more specific to them. And then I wanted to get you guys on as two very experienced coaches and guys who are doing it really well to kind of touch on the coach's perspective of being a coach during this time and kind of things that we can not only learn from it, but also just how we can continue to show up better and better. So that's kind of the premise for today. So basically I'm going to just pass it back and forth. So, in terms of me asking the question, I'll kind of pose the question and then I'll just I'll hand it over to one of you guys and then kind of flip back and forth. That way we're not trying to decide who's gonna speak and who's gonna take the question first. So that's the objective. So the first thing I want to talk about is basically hitting it straight on here. How can current competitors show up for themselves and their coaches during this time? Because I know I've talked to Alex quite a bit. You know, I'm sure not as much as Sue gets the breadth of it, but just kind of some frustrations on how some competitors are handling the time, which I think is understandable as far as just everyone's human and we all have stressors and we all deal with things differently. But on the behalf of the coach, basically, I want to kind of get an insight on both of you guys' perspective on how the client can not only show up for themselves better based off your perspectives, and how can that client better show up for the coach in terms of how they can respond, maybe dealing with some different coping mechanisms and maybe asking better questions or less frequent emails or whatever it is. So I'll hand it over to Paul first. I'll have you start and then we'll go to Alex.
You know, it's such a case by case basis that we're dealing with. So the best way an athlete can show up for me is just by giving me as much information as possible. I think, you know, oftentimes competitors, clients, athletes, whatever, the people that you're working with, you know, they'll often say, well, I didn't want to bother you. I knew you're busy. So the big thing with me is I always try to take that wall down so that people don't ever feel like I'm busy or that it's not important enough to talk about. Because, you know, if I have a client that's lost their job, has no access to a gym, you know, I got to try to solve solutions for that person. But if they don't ever let me know that's happening, that's something that I can't really do. And if someone needs, you know, I've had a couple clients that are like in the National Guard that have had to deploy, and you know, that, you know, so they're clearly, you know, basically paused right now because they don't know what they're going to be doing. They're out in the field. They don't have access to nutrition and training equipment. And then I have a lot of clients that life is going on as normal. You know, they have secure jobs, they have access to a training facility, and they're actually benefiting from this because there's no outside social pressure to go eat and be with their friends and family. So some people are actually liking this better. You know, I'm sure they're afraid to admit it, but you know, I've had some conversations along that. So the most important thing from an athlete coach perspective is just having that conversation around what situation they're in, because, you know, I've adopted this philosophy a long time ago that I'm not just a coach for like macros and, you know, strength progressions and fat loss. And I'm a life coach in a lot of ways, because I'm helping them look for solutions to problems that most people would probably just decide to quit. Right. But, you know, bodybuilders and athletes, we tend to like look at an opportunity differently. You know, so that's basically what it is. Find out what their situation is and then see if there are some solutions. And maybe that solution is, hey, let's just ease up a little bit. Let's have a little more freedom until we have some answers. But, you know, comes down to personality, goals. There's so much that goes into it.
Absolutely. What about you, Alex?
I can agree with that. I think that just the client being transparent with the situation, if you have the opportunity to get on the call with them and kind of walk them through where your mind is at with where their physique is at, and just being vocal with where, you know, what's on their plate currently, and then also what they kind of foresee if they have anything big going on later in the year of like vacations or weddings or things of that nature, so that you can plan around those things to keep those things in mind so that, you know, they are feeling heard as well as with their emotions that, you know, Paul already kind of touched on, but just being there for them as an individual, as their coach, but also with someone that's much more than just training and nutrition, cardio, those type of things.
Right. And yeah, that's great, because that really adds to what so Sue and Chanel from last week's episode, you know, talking on behalf of the competitor during a time like this and what they're asking for, or what the competitor can ask of their coach. And they really both touched on being able to best communicate with that person and be as honest as they can with that person, and to be as transparent with that person as they can. And that being sure that that's reciprocated and met with actual understanding. And you know, this isn't necessarily the time to beat someone into the ground, you know, or into submission, because you don't know quite how to handle that. So the answer is, well, just more, and we'll figure it out later, or we'll just keep digging. And without recognizing maybe what your direct goal is at the time. So that leads us into kind of those, the next question I had for you guys. And again, we'll start with Paul here, but strategies for staying within striking distance, or taking a step back to prepare for next season. So kind of, you know, I have both of you kind of touch on things that you're implementing maybe with your competitors at this time, or just clients in general. It doesn't have to be competitors, but you know, things after that initial conversation of someone coming to you, expressing where they're at and being transparent with that. And you guys identifying with that person on, look, are we going to hang around if shows start, you know, end up starting back up in August, which who knows? And kind of strategies to stay within striking distance there. And then also from the same sense, those individuals who you've talked to, you know, everyone agrees like, okay, maybe this is time for us to take a step back. What are some good strategies to ease into that process so it's not completely off the wagon? So Paul, if you kind of want to start there.
Yeah. So I think the two most common that I've dealt with were people that were literally a few weeks out from a stage, you know, people that had shows in March and April. Cause I was actually at the first two competitions of the year, you know, thinking things were going to go as normal. And we literally had to put the brakes on so many people. And then you have the other people that were planning to compete in say June, July, August. So the first scenario was their shows were canceled. In those situations, you take it on a case-by-case basis. I've had a couple girls whose shows were canceled who no longer have access to a gym that they don't really want to hang on to stage condition and maybe compete in July without a gym, because now you're going to be getting on stage worse than your last outing, right? Like, I don't care how good your bands are. You're not going to be able to hang on and continue to build muscle like you would if you had access to a gym, right? The other side of that is people that were in prep. I even had a girl, I just put her in my story today. She was about to do her first show, The Clash, and she was looking fantastic a few weeks out. We found out the show was canceled. We started the diet break in the reverse. She continued to get leaner. She has access to a gym. She's doing wonderful. So we're just treating this as a pre-prep off season with her. You know, we're continuing to add calories and put her in a position to compete in. You know, I'm not expecting any shows before July, and realistically August. So probably late July, early August is when I think actual shows with people will happen. So that scenario is what you have to explain to people. I'm not, you know, trying to be optimistic and thinking that there's going to be a show in May. So, you know, my goal for every person is to just discuss with them, you know, where are we at? Because I made a YouTube video the other day about like the strategy for this season and the specific group of people that I work with, bikini competitors, natural bodybuilders. This is going to be an amazing year for opportunities because of what's happening. All of the national shows, all of the top natural pro shows are going to be from August to November now. So you're not going to have to stay in shape from May to November. Like, you're really going to be able to pack in a lot of shows in a short amount of time. And if you have access to a gym, you are probably going to have an advantage again. And if you are taking care of yourself right now and, you know, not putting on a bunch of body fat and taking care of your metabolism, doing all the right things, you're going to be at an advantage. So my goal is to be positive, put them in a, you know, set some strategy kind of plans in place and put them in the right mindset, because I'm looking at this as a huge opportunity this year. There's going to be some things happen that have never happened before, especially with my pros, where there's going to be probably three or four pro shows on the same day. And when and you're in for the Olympia, that's like a huge stepping stone for any bikini competitor. So, you know, I'm looking at just trying to always pay attention to what's going on. They've announced some show dates, others they've announced windows. So, hey, let's plan for opportunity. Because you'll always look back and be like, damn, I wish I would have planned for that, because we don't know what's coming. But I'll say this, the NPC, the IFBB, the OCB, the people that I've talked to are chomping at the bit to have some good quality shows get off the ground. So it's coming. We just don't know when.
Yeah. Alex?
So I think that we're on the same page there with diet breaks. And I think that utilizing more frequent refeeds, I think a big thing that I'm driving home with a lot of competitors who, there was a few competitors who their shows were canceled while they were in peak week on that front end of the pandemic starting. And that was really hard for them to be, 48 hours from their show and, having to kind of construct a game plan to figure out what they're going to do from there. But focusing on a lot of parasympathetic activity with reading and more rest, really making better use of their sleep, I think has been a big driving force. And we're seeing with athletes right now that looks are sharpening up because they're focusing on factors that they were kind of letting go by the wayside because of that concrete timeline that they were being held by. So now we've got a big window here where we can prioritize the things that were maybe less of a priority then. So making that a big thing and focusing on hopefully August being the kind of window that I'm using for the athletes right now of, okay, if we're going to stay, trying to compete this year, then we're going to be shooting for August. And then we've got a plethora of shows at that point to see great success, especially if somebody's trying to hit the national circuit. We don't have to, keep in shape for extended periods. Like Paul said, we've got the ability to hit multiple national shows and not have to really string out this dieting phase as we would have if we were going to without this, occurring.
Yeah. And I would just to expand kind of one package what both of you said in terms of being a time of opportunity for a competitor and taking that break and utilizing it for what it's really worth. And I can speak from my own experience in those competitors that I have worked with, but specific to my own experience, when I was able to go from like my best looks as a competitor came to fruition when I was able to do a show or get stage lean. And, as of now, like at that time, I was able to do the show and then sort of chill out and just start to reverse back up in a sense. And I was able to reduce cardio. I chilled out a little bit more. I, was more parasympathetic within my action, like Alex kind of pointed out. And things just, I feel like once you're that lean, once you're able to accept the fact and kind of have the right plan in place and have the right coach to do it, you can really see the benefit and the opportunity of taking that step back. And I think I wanted to ask you guys this as far as, one of the hardest things as a coach, especially dealing with or coaching people who are so highly driven, especially, physique competitors as they are, a lot of the, I think, resistance on the coach's behalf is getting that client a lot of times to just chill and trust that, look, if we take a diet break, if we took a week off right now, you'd look better. And I think in the eyes, the mind of the competitor, a lot of times, especially an early on competitor, it's the complete opposite of, I don't think you're right, and they're not bought into that, whether you have tried and true proof over time or not, or they've seen it be done. Speaking from my own experience as a, early on in my competing career, it was really hard for me to, and Alex can contest this, it was really hard for me to take any step back. If it was anything, it was more. And then I think the more seasons you get, right, it's like, oh shit, okay, I know less can be truly more. And I think in the time of opportunity that you've both expressed, it's allowing, I think, for those, especially those early on competitors to realize, especially if they were able to be a stage lean and kind of moving throughout peak week, they're able to realize like, oh, maybe they're right. Like taking a step back can allow me to maybe even look better, sharpen up and rest and recover from that. Do you guys have anything to add to that before I ask the next question?
I mean, I'll just agree with what you said. I think, I probably didn't pay attention to it enough early in my coaching career, even in my competing career, that I always looked better and my clients always looked better at their second or third show. And I always associated it with, oh, we've just gotten leaner. But now I associate it with the break of peak week. Peak week is essentially a diet break. Calories come up, cardio goes down, the stress and anxiety of the show done. then you go back into prep for the next show and it's like, wow, I just look better. You know, everything's better. You know, you look harder, you train better. You don't have the anxiety for the second show. You're not worried about your tan or check-ins or any of these things. And so for a couple of years, I didn't really realize that it was the actual peak week that was actually helping me. I always would lose like a couple pounds during peak week. And I always just, you know, I made the wrong correlation there. But now knowing what I know, and I'm pretty fortunate. I think most people that are my clients find me because of the things I do. So they don't usually fight me on a diet break. And if I feel like they're going to fight me on a diet break, I'll say, we're going to do a 2-day refeed, check in after 2 days. We're going to do 2 more days, check in. So I just, you know, Miyagi them into a diet break, whether they know it or not. So yeah, I completely agree with all those things that I used to think harder, more. And now I think, okay, pull back for just a little bit. And man, the body is so much more resilient when you actually let off the gas for just a bit, you know, it responds so much better.
Yeah. Alex?
Thing that I will also state is that if they still have access to a gym or at least a good bit of equipment at home, I'm backing off of training frequency as well as total volume to an extent. I've seen, you know, good results with that as well over this time frame of just if they're training 5 days, maybe backing off to 4 or what have you. And we've seen you know, good strides there.
Yeah, so I'm pretty good friends with Dr. Brett Contreras, and his training style is a lot different than most bodybuilding coaches. You know, he does a lot of effort with strength, and I did a seminar with him earlier this year, and I switched a lot of my programming, like, you know, like Alex mentioned here, to more of a, you know, less total volume, more kind of intensity within a couple sets, and it's been a wonderful response during this period of time. Because people don't have access to, you know, 300 machines where, you know, we're trying to get by with a dumbbell. And I, you know, my girls are like, well, I'm really sore. These are great workouts. And I'm like, yeah, like, you know, you don't need a gym to have a good workout.
Yeah. And I think, you know, something Alex and I, you know, discuss a lot within a mini podcast that we do together, or as a team, and it's understanding volume a little bit better and that, that relationship with intensity that volume has. And it's quite an intimate relationship. And that's why we speak so highly on, you know, exercise execution and being able to place a significant amount of tension kind of on the target muscles and target tissue with those movements. And I think we're seeing even more so now with, you know, being able to prescribe home workouts, those who can execute and place tension or focus tension to the muscle groups and create intensity in many different facets and many different ways are getting by with less, meaning that, you know, they're doing less total sets, but the sets they're doing are worth a lot more. So if you're able to get away with, you know, let's say hitting 30 sets in a workout instead of hitting 50 to 60 set workouts. And I think especially with not being able to fully gauge, we're out of our normalcy as far as proprioception in the way that we know what a specific type of training session gets us at the gym with a certain amount of load and resistance and tempo and rest periods. And we understand that. But no matter how much you know, or no matter how experienced you are as a competitor, and even as a coach, a lot of times, like I, early on in the lockdown, like, you know, my wife had and I, we're just working off a TRX resistance band, some squat wedges, and like a lot of body weight sort of stuff. And I've absolutely beat myself into submission with different training styles or different intensity. What am I looking for here?
Parameters.
Techniques.
Like techniques. Thank you. Techniques, yes. Yeah. Intensity techniques. My brain's not working as much today, but it's interesting where we're seeing this, and something that Sue mentioned yesterday, it's been really cool to be able to see people adapt and see coaches adapt and see an industry really adapt to new situations. And I don't know if any of us were very used to, especially in this, you know, sect of the industry, we're very used to having to prescribe at home training sessions or very capable of knowing that we were going to get a great stimulus when someone went on vacation. But now even more so, we're just, now we know. It's like, okay, I'm confident. Like, there's no more second guessing of like, I think this is going to be great. I don't know. But you just give it to them anyways and hope for the best. And something's better than nothing if they go on holiday, for example. But now I think
And there's no greater teacher than doing it. I think all of us are practitioners. So like when I have to write a home gym workout for a client, I go in there and do it. And it's like, okay, that was way too much or not enough. And you figure it out pretty quick. You know, you can tell somebody, you know, that's the one of the gripes I have with a lot of the coaches that I get clients from. I look at their programs and I'm like, this looks great on paper. No one could survive this in the gym. So like real world application, you might say like, well, how come there's only 9 sets of legs on my leg day? So go do them, you know? Yeah. So I think home workouts are like that. You can do velocity based. I have a lot of my clients doing like jump squats. Doesn't sound like much, but go do them. It's hard, you know? So yeah, you're exactly right. You're kind of relearning movements and hitting things in a different way. So you're getting a different stimulus. And I think at the end of this, it is going to be better. I'm curious to see how the gym business recovers. If these huge, LA Fitness type gyms, suffer, because, you know, I've been an LA Fitness member for, God, I think 15, 16 years, and I've just never canceled it. And I go probably a couple times a year. But the idea behind, and they canceled their membership fees. You know, I got an email, hey, you're not paying. And I thought that was wonderful, but like, you know, people are going to get more self-reliant. So we're going to see where this goes. I think if I was in the home, you know, Brett, cause he sells some home gym stuff and he's literally can't keep it in stock. Like, and if you sell home gym equipment right now, you are like pretty happy.
Yeah. I know that, like Prime Fitness, for example, they've received thousands of inquiries over the past week, just like trying to keep up with, keep up with home orders and people becoming more self-reliant. And I, to that point, Paul, I'm very curious to see where all that goes. And I'm hoping for the industry, like personal training in and of itself, outside of kind of what we do, because what we do is a little bit special in terms of how we're able to operate, and we're not as dependent on a brick and mortar, but or at least a specific brick and mortar. But I'm hoping that the personal training industry can survive it, as far as we have a high enough turnover as it is in the industry, with people just popping in and out because they either like the attire they get to wear, or it's kind of a piss off job they can do while they're doing an X or X, Y, and Z things. But I also think that there's a certain amount of, like, you know, we've all probably heard trimming the fat off of who doesn't necessarily need to be there. And I think those people are going to just quietly, and I don't want anything other than them just to quietly just scoot back and retract from, you know, what other people are more qualified and more apt to be able to do. And, you know, I think there's a lot of that's going to kind of show itself, and I'm grateful for that, but I'm also a little nervous because I do know a handful of really, really good trainers, you know, and I happen to coach some of them. And speaking with some of them, I mean, they're really nervous about what their future looks like, comparatively. So, I mean, it's interesting on both ends of the spectrum there.
Yeah, I never wanted to be a personal trainer, so that was never a concern for me.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I actually am opening a gym right now, so... but it's an experience based facility. It's not about, we're not going to have personal trainers in there. It's going to be about coming in for seminars, for posing, for, I'm going to have my podcast there with Lauren, you know, it's, so we're going to have a full gym, but you know, I'm taking the opposite approach. I started online and now I'm going brick and mortar, but it's literally because my house has become this hub of activity and my wife's like, get it off my property. So, you know, like, you know, 4 or 5 girls posing in bikinis, you know, Lauren's coming over to do podcasts. Like there's always, you know, I have 11 coaches now, so there's just always people here. And Misty's like, we need, so, you know, that I think the boutique style of gyms are going to do very well. Those are experiences. You know, a gym that requires 10,000 members to keep the lights on, while there's, you know, you can say what you want about Planet Fitness, but their business model, $9.99 a month, and That's hard to compete with if you're charging $35-$40 a month for similar facilities. You know, bodybuilders might notice a difference. My parents aren't going to notice the difference between LA Fitness and Planet Fitness. So,
yeah, I mean, this whole thing has put the fast track on me building out the home gym for us. So we've got the time order coming in this, you know, in the next couple of weeks, dumbbells and things like that. I think that I'm putting myself on the fast track to be following you, Paul, and in terms of being told to get it out of the house and you know, get the own facility with the equipment and posing and things of that nature. So yeah, I'm excited to have stuff at the house and be able to train a little bit more efficiently outside of like the commute, as well as socializing, as that's like the main time for me to have human, you know, face-to-face interaction outside of the, you know, voice memos and emails that I do on a day-to-day basis. So it'll be cool to have things here and kind of see what I like more, and whether it be the gym or at the house.
Yeah, I think those who are really stand out and are going to continue to stand out are the folks who are creating the experience. Again, it's, you know, it goes back to whatever the exact saying is, but, you know, people aren't necessarily hiring. It's very rare that people, you know, if you go to a gym or a big box gym, people are going to walk in and say, I want a personal trainer. I don't care who it is. You have those people. But as a, you know, I think bigger picture, more often, especially now where the public is, I think, becoming more educated on what it means to have a good personal trainer and what that looks like. You know, people are now hiring other people. People are hiring other, like, actual coaches to be more individualized, to fit their personalities, to fit what they want to do based off of that person's experience and how they handle conflict resolution, emotional distress. And we see that obviously with, you know, referrals from other clients or referrals from other competitors or whatever. So I think creating that experience is going to be extremely cool. And I know that's something Alex and I always kind of go back and forth on, of like, hey, you know, the one day, the dream of having something like that is definitely something we eventually hopefully want to do. I know it's ruminating around up there for the both of us. So to see how yours does, and to hopefully be able to come down and, you know, see what you're working with there and just experience it and get to see the space would be cool.
Yeah, I think the first step is admitting you want something, because once you start talking about it, and, you know, like I mentioned it to my wife, I've mentioned it to my coaches, and then they'll be like, oh, I saw this building for rent over here. And then, oh, we were sitting at this restaurant, someone overheard us talking. So it's weird when you put these ideas out into the universe and breathe life into them more than just in between your ears, they start to take shape. And that's how we found our space. It's 1 mile from my house where there is no commercial real estate. I live out in the country. But there's this little plot of commercial land. This guy has a restaurant on it. He has like one of those escape room properties. And he had a building that was basically being used by the restaurant as storage. It was empty, and it, 2,000 square feet. And my wife just one day was like, hey, what's that building? And he's like, oh, yeah, it's just storage. And so we looked around it and struck a great deal with him. He's a really good guy. So like, the pieces fit. If it had to be 15 minutes away from me, I wouldn't do it, right? It's literally like the first thing when I leave my neighborhood that I see. So yeah, it's like those ideas, I've had them too, you know? So it's always about putting that next idea out there. Well, if this works, what's next? And so that's what we're, you know, that's basically, I've been doing this for 10 years now, and it was like one client. Well, maybe I should start a business, you know? And then that's literally how everything kind of forms, in my opinion, is that you have to take that first step, because you don't know what it's going to lead to. Like this gym, I don't know what it's going to lead to, you know? Who's to say I don't open up a box gym or something someday, or, you know, like become Christian Guzman and open Alpha Land? I don't know.
I can see it, Paul.
Listen, I used to have very small goals and expectations. I used to think like, I just want to have enough clients that I can quit my job. Right. I don't have any of that anymore. I'm here to be fucking Weight Watchers. I'm here to take over the world now. Like, if I'd fall short of that, great. But I'm no longer thinking to myself like, man, I just want to be successful. I have too many amazing people in my life that have bought into what we're doing to think that it'd be amazing.
Yeah. I think I want nothing more than to see that happen, because I think that sets the stage for those to come after you. You know, and the big corporations now, the big conglomerates now, like, again, those exist because the first one existed.
Right.
Like, you don't know what's possible until it actually happens and you can see someone go through it. And, you know, for those who are kind of right there in terms of like being on the back end of where we're at right now and working our way and gaining that experience, I mean, it's a matter of watching someone like you do that. It does nothing but motivate those of us who are trying to keep working towards something like that, depending on what it is.
Yeah. I mean, I've had a lot of people that I was able to look up to. There wasn't a lot of people doing what we do 10 years ago. Right. But I knew them. I knew Lane Norton. I knew Dr. Joe. And so I've always been able to lean on them for questions and answers. And I think for a long time, my business model was like, what did they do next? But that's changed now. I'm looking beyond that and, just trying to figure it out as I go. And, you know, you're right, because so here's a great example. So a couple of years ago, I went and spoke to Dr. Bill Campbell's like grad class at USF Exercise Science. And I'm like, you want me to speak to a class of graduate, you know, like master's students in exercise science, thinking, oh my gosh, this is crazy. But they were all, so I had them, the first thing I said was, who is here to like do what I do, be an online coach or do coaching? I think maybe 3 out of the 20 raised their hand. They all were going into like the medical field, doctor of physical therapy, you know, even med school. I went this year and spoke, and I think of those 30, 27 said they wanted to be online coaches. I was like, holy shit. Like the whole paradigm has shifted. Like people are now going to school to do what we do.
Yeah.
Like, and you guys are a lot younger than me. There was no what we do. There was no school for what we do. I think Lane was probably the first one to like popularize the idea of education to becoming an online coach. Right. But it's form. It's like, you know, and it should be. I've said this field for a long time is the wild, wild west. There's way too much success to be had for it not to be kind of raised up by education. So yeah, no, I love where it's going and seeing how far it's come.
Yeah. I want to ask a couple more questions here. So the first one I wanted to ask, advice you could share with other coaches for best handling their clients and competitors during this time. I know we kind of touched on those in the beginning, but I want to be sure towards the end here for those coaches and competitors alike and just clients in general can really take some application from this. So Alex, I want to start with you. So the question again, advice you could share with other coaches for best handling their clients and competitors during this time.
I would say the first thing is just being human. I think that kind of comes full circle from everything that we've spoke on. It's just being human, understanding that no one is going through this alone and everyone is going through this together is big, and driving that home to your clients is going to really pay dividends for them from a sense of famine, the team, with your, you know, other clients and things of that nature. And then also understand that when you are creating training, creating nutrition, I think that it's very easy to fall into the thought process of, I don't know if this is right. And understanding that all coaches right now are also going through this, where nobody's gone through this type of thing before, where they've got competitors who are 100% ready to go, and then they've got to somehow keep them or get them to that same shape here in, you know, 16 or 20 weeks after the fact. And so understanding that this is uncharted waters, and this is a time for you to really put some different things into practice and be willing to try different things do different peak week practices and training frequency, all different type of factors. This is a time to get a lot of new data and understand different things about your clients and so on and so forth. So I think that would be some things that I would drive home to coaches out there.
Yeah, I love what you said about being more human. I think that's, this is something I figured out a long time ago, that online coaching doesn't have to be online. The term online I think it implies that there's a separation between your client and you know, even my first experience with my first online coach, it was all emails and very short emails, you know, like, and that's what the experience was like. And then what I found is that for me as a coach, I don't enjoy it that much unless there's like this personal interaction. So the human thing is huge. I love my job so much more because I feel like I know all my clients and I'm talking to like people and I know what their husbands do and that their kids and I know where they're stressed. So I'm going to give you guys some practical things on things I did. So this is how my brain works when it comes to being an online coach. I look at what everyone else is doing and I go, I'm going to do it better. I'm going to do it faster. I'm going to do it a different way. I'm very good at kind of looking at what's going on and going, what can I do right now? So we had spring break planned with my kids to go down to Fort Lauderdale. And this thing happened like the week before lockdown, Florida, you know, they didn't put us in lockdown, but we felt it was coming. So we still went down to my best friend's house. And I said to Misty, if this thing goes like sideways and clients start canceling, I'm going to have to like stop what I'm doing and get back to work. And I might have to just work around the clock to manage this thing. Cause I didn't know what was going to happen, you know? So literally the day I get down there, you know, people start messaging me, hey coach, what should we do? I just put out a mass message. I said, every single client of mine, I'm writing you a custom home program right now. Send me your equipment list. And I sat there for 12 hours and wrote home training programs, you know? And you know, honestly, the first couple took the longest. And then once you get a nice template going and you get a feel for like, who's got kettlebells, who's got dumbbells, who's lifting a couch. I actually made some posts. It was funny. Half the people would be like, I have a 30-pound beagle. And I'd be like, that's not equipment. Yeah. But so that was my response, was like, okay, what's, you know, I saw some online coaches and this is what they did. And not throwing any shade, but they immediately threw up a $79 at home workout program on their website. And I thought, okay, here's what I'm going to do. It's not only am I giving all my clients free programs, I have coaches on my team that we have free programs on the Pro Physique website right now. So, you know, I'm much more about brand than dollars. I'm much more about helping people than making a couple extra bucks. Because when the brand is there, the money comes. You don't have to worry about the money. But when you're nickel and diming people all the time, buy this, buy that, pick up this, pick up that. I just think you look at people differently. I know I look at people differently once they start doing that. And you can see the shift. You can see them go from information, free, sign up for this. And then that's all they harp on, this, right? And so I never want to become that. And it's something I struggle with my company, because sometimes my wife will be like, well, why aren't you charging for this? And I'll be like, just trust me. We got here because of over-indexing on doing the right thing and helping people. And so that's always my thing, is like, I said, I'm just going to lose a day of my life and write training programs for people at home. And once I got through that first initial wave, now I get a couple here and there and it's fine. But that was kind of my thought.
And we were in a very similar facet with that too, is like, we felt the initial surge and kind of did essentially, Austin, you can echo this. I think we did five programs that were like body weight only, dumbbell and body weight only, and then kind of did those examples of like, okay, this is the initial thing, share those all through the Facebook group, and then kind of sprinkle in, okay, now we can get more specific for everyone over this time frame, was like the easiest way for us to kind of hammer it out and do that. I think another thing that we did as well that could be helpful for coaches is that we put resources into our Facebook with all of our clients, where if they have kids, recommendations of how to, some things that they can do with their kids. I know that one big thing that was helpful for that was that we had recommended to do like an Olympics with your kids, like different obstacles and things around the house for them to get a gold medal or what have you. And that was a big thing for our clients that they saw a lot of fun with. Simple stuff, just like show that you're caring, show that you're a human, like we said, and you'll pay, you'll receive back from that. I think it's huge.
Yeah, that's always what I default on. I default on, at the end of the day, I would do all of this for free. The fact that I get to get paid for it, and I even tried to make a YouTube video. Like I had one of my coaches, Kate, come over, and we did a whole home workout. It got fucking zero views, so I didn't do another one because I realized there are channels that are actually, like people like Athlean X that put out training stuff, that started doing it and they did it better. So I'm like, I don't need to do it. But that was the kind of direction I was going to go to if I needed to.
Yeah. I think the initial thing for us, and again, like for any coach listening right now, I think it's a matter of what can you do now? And if this were to come around again, and I don't think that's out of the question, like a second, a third wave of whatever this is, just show up how you can show up and do what you can do. And it doesn't have to be perfect the first time around. Like Alex said, you know, initially all we put out was how can we best serve five different avatars of clients? How can we best serve these five styles of training at home? And then it's a matter of, you know, exactly what you did, Paul, putting out a message to each client, send me everything you have. And then, you know, I'm like today, I have a handful of programs to write based off of this client had X, Y, and Z. Now they've ordered their order from Rogue or finally came in.
Finally came in.
Alex is still waiting on his. Today. Okay, there you go. And, you know, now you can do better and write an even better program, but that doesn't mean at the beginning you couldn't show up for them at the very start and do what you can there and just provide value where you can. And I think one thing I want to add to kind of what both of you said, and I think this is a time right now where the human element is so crucial. And coming into this pandemic period, and I think it's easy for coaches, especially younger coaches who, you know, have gained really fast clout over social. And they've learned how positioning can benefit them in the short term, meaning they're working off of, well, look, I'm the coach, you're the client relationship. And that positioning and that clout they've gained, whether it's actual or figurative, or imaginative in their own mind, you know, there's that positioning of, look, I'm the expert, I'm the authority in this situation. And I think in a situation, especially like we're in, but I think in general, that needs to be just cut right in half. That just needs to be nipped in the bud. And you need to understand, and you guys can feedback here if you think I'm wrong, but if I think it's best to understand it's a human talking to another human. It's someone with more specialization in an area talking to someone with more specialization in other areas of life. Like, I'm not going to teach you how to parent, Paul, because I don't have children, but I could teach you how to do something maybe I know how to do a little bit better. And we're going to work together to make the best of the situation. And I think coming forward and just telling that person, and like Alex started the whole conversation with here, of first, you're human and we're dealing with other humans, and it's so, so important to be able to meet them where they're at and let them know that they can trust you, you're here for them, and let them know that, look, we've never done this before. I'm doing my best and I'm working alongside you and your feedback here to let me know what's going on. Because I think probably the most harmful thing you could do is think what you're doing is best because you are the coach, you are the quote unquote authority, and you're not listening to them. You're not getting feedback from them in real time to work on that. You know, there's programs like that I've sent, for example, that are clients come back, or I put myself through it. I'm like, fuck you. Why did I ever, like, no, I'm not even gonna do that. So I would, you know, I went back and like took volume away, you know, just like you said, like it's, some things can look good on paper, and good is in quotations there, because I think what is best in application looks worst on paper a lot of the time. Because one of the only feedback, a lot of the feedback we get from programming is, this is it. It's like, dude, like you said, Paul, just do it. Then get back to me. And after that first week, they're just like, man, holy shit. All right. I'm so glad this does not look like the other programs out there. But I think the first thing and the last thing is just letting your clients, again, let human interaction, letting them know that you're in this together, and no matter how they view you as an authority or out of how much respect they have for you, that you're coming down. Like when you first meet a dog, you want to kneel down and come to its level, you know, come to eye level with that person. Like you're not standing over as this iron giant of a figure and holding more authority than you deserve over another human being. Like, we hold a lot of responsibility for people's health, and especially during this time, for people's sanity and emotional stability. And I think it's the most important that you're figuratively kneeling down and coming to that level. So if your client's sitting, sit. If your client's standing, stand. If your client's laying down, just lay down. Like, get on their level, figure it out, meet them where they're at, and go from there. But I think that's probably the biggest thing that I've seen as far as coaches who are showing up best than coaches who are continuing their figurative or imaginative clout.
I think a lot of that also comes down to how you connect with your clients. You know, like, you know, I've talked to some people inquired recently, and all of their interactions have been through an app or through texting or email, where like I have a link for all my clients to set up a call with me whenever they want. And I do a week, you know, Facebook private video only for my clients where we answer questions and talk. So yeah, for me, I've used this time as like, hey, I'm not going to be at any shows for a while. That's when I get out and meet people, you know, like at the Arnold, and there was no one at the Arnold, you know, I got to see like 8 people. So like, so I'm using this time to go, okay, well, thank goodness we're at this point in technology. I mean, had this happened 10 years ago, I think AOL Instant Messenger would have broke because everyone would have been on it. But you know, now we have, gosh, I mean, is there a better time to be stuck at home? No, I mean, we have everything. I can literally watch anything I want that's ever been created. Talk to anybody I want free of charge, you know? So like, I'm telling you, I see this as an advantage and as a positive. And, you know, the word I keep using with my team when I talk about this period of time is I'm like, we started a lot of little projects now because we're not traveling and we're going to be slingshotted. So like, we're slowing down, but as soon as this thing gets free, boom, we're going to take off because we've got all these little things on the work that are just going to, like, the gym's coming out and these other things I got going on. And it's like, I don't know. That's just how I feel. And maybe that's being 44 and having gone through some stuff like this before. Like, people don't remember 9/11. You know, I had a job back then. We thought the world was going to end. But like, you know, having gone through some things like this, you realize that like, no matter how big the recession or how big, you know, like, we're going to come back better. It's just how you handle that period during that time to say where you end up. So I'm just, like, in a weird sadistic way, it's kind of, I kind of like that this is happening. It's given us a chance to, like, you know, take account for what we have.
It's a test. It's a challenge for sure. Alex and I had jobs. I'm gonna let you go here, Alex, but Alex and I had jobs, and that was the first and second grade, but I'll let Alex speak here.
Yeah. What question are you wanting me to answer here?
I didn't know if you had anything to say. I don't know.
I don't think so.
Okay. you already answered the other one. So thanks.
Cool.
As far as the last question here, excuse me. So this is a question I asked the gals yesterday or in last week's episode. And I really like this question. It's always been a question that I reflect on in moments of, you know, whether it's emotional distress or a sense of existential distress of over ruminating on the past and fear of the future and getting anxious. And I always kind of return back to this question. And I think it follows it follows suit of the practice of journaling and mindfulness in the sense. But I want to ask you both, and we'll start with you, Paul, and we'll end with Alex here. But if you could, here's the question. If you could write a letter to yourself as a first-year coach, how would it read? So what would you tell yourself? Pandemic aside, just in general.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
It's a really good question. That's a tough one because, you know, part of me wants to be like, hey, you need to learn more. But then part of me is like, you know, it would essentially go like this. Like, you're on the right path. You know, the decisions you're making now are going to lead you to becoming a better coach. Be completely open-minded. Do not, this would probably be the biggest thing that's changed for me. Do not look at other coaches that you consider to be bad coaches and think everything they do is bad. There's a reason why coaches are successful. So look at everyone and what they're doing, and look and take the pieces that have made them successful and then put it into your lens where you see your ethics and your morals lining up. And that's the thing that took me the longest to unlearn what I first heard about people. You know, I used to make a lot of assumptions about people because I heard from one person that this coach was bad. And, the journey aside, you know, continuing my education, surrounding that I already did. I know I'm going to do that. I know I'm going to surround myself with people that have the knowledge, seek that out, and continue to learn and evolve forever. But unlearning that exterior wall of I'm right and you're wrong, that took me the longest. So my letter would just be a lot about, like, just because you see somebody as not maybe being a very good coach, look at what they're doing that's making them successful and how come you know who they are. And there's probably a lot of answers and where you should be going. Because it took me a little while to figure that out.
I like that answer. Alex?
I think two things I would really drive home is be very willing to share. Don't hold on to the fear of being wrong. I think that, even now, I think even, you know, especially at the very beginning, I was very, very fearful of being wrong and then having someone that I looked up to, that they would see it and look at me as a poor coach, and that would just completely disqualify me as a coach for forever, not just simply being wrong in that instantaneous moment. So, not being afraid of failure within, sharing something of where your knowledge is at. It's going to constantly evolve with your continued education, and you're going to, you know, look back and say, okay, well, I kind of did this wrong, and now I'm on a better path, and I'm doing things better. I think that just being willing to kind of fall on your face, being willing to pick yourself back up would be something I would really drive home with myself, as I think that that's been the biggest success within the last 3 years, that I've just been more willing to fall on my face and to learn and ask questions and inquire with those who you look up to, I think is a big thing.
Right on.
Yeah, I like that.
Thank you guys. Any closing remarks?
I think the thing about feeling inferior, like you might say, or do the wrong thing, I think that just takes a little while to get over. I think it took me a while to make my first YouTube video about answering people's questions. I had to have the confidence to answer questions via email before I could ever put it out on the internet. That was the scariest thing ever, is to make a video about an opinion you have and then put it on the internet and then just wait for the hate to come in. You're like, oh God, what if someone, and one thing that I've learned is, like, if someone says something and it hurts my feelings, it's probably some truth to it. Like, you know, if someone says, like, you're an idiot, this is not true, this is the truth, then I go, let me look that up, make sure I'm not speaking off. And so what it's actually caused me to do is make better topics and better videos, because now when I'm going to talk about something, I don't take this line in the sand stance that, you know, the snake diet, it is terrible because why? Well, what if it's working for some people? It might be terrible in practice for some people, but there's an application somewhere for someone that it works. So I always try to find both sides to it, to debate myself before I make a video, because I've found that helps me learn better. And again, it comes down to not having negative opinions about other things and other people. And just understanding that if you get down to it, if you sit down in a room with just about anybody one-on-one, when you boil it down, you're going to be pretty similar in your thinking. You're trying to find the best solution through your experiences for people. And we just all have completely different experiences. That's why there's a carnivore diet and a keto diet and a low carb diet and a, you know, flexible diet, because we've all experienced something that caused us to go, no, this is the best way. That's, you know, like, you ever notice the people that are the most religiously zealous people are generally the people that were the shittiest people earlier in their lives, and then they found Jesus? I think sometimes there's a correlation there with dieting culture. Like, people find a diet that works for them because nothing else did, but you know, and so that's the only way. But, you know, I try to see through that and not judge.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing there as well, just to expand a little bit on your first remark about creating content and getting past the anxieties of putting things out. This is something that's helped me a lot over the past couple of years as I've started to put out a lot more content. And as a company, we've put out a lot more content, and we're taking our personal stance on a lot of different things, whether that be exercise, execution, technique, tutorials, set intensifiers, whatever we're taking a stance on and we're putting out into the world of our opinion. It's because it's gotten a lot easier, because I think fundamentally we know now that information, the effort we put into that video and the contents of that video is no longer for us. We didn't make that video for us. We made that video for those who are going to watch it. And I think that's such a crucial step for coaches to get to, is realizing why you're doing something and understanding fundamentally why you're doing something. And so, you know, if you're nervous and scared and unwilling to put out content, really think about and introspect about why is that? Is that because that content, you're making that content about you? You're worried that other people aren't going to like it, that you want to like you. You're worried that other people aren't going to like it from an engagement perspective, which means a lot to you, because who's going to judge that now? So those who look up to me are going to see that that video got, or those who I look up to are going to now see that that video got no engagement. Therefore, that is my self-worth. And like, I've gone through all these things. I can admit that. And I think now it's, you know, there's a place where we all get, I think, as coaches and as content creators and as people who are just fundamentally wired to want to help other people. And that's coming from a place where your North Star is, look, this is beyond me. I'm putting this out from experience, from education, from, you know, being in the trenches, from being in the classroom to whatever it is. I'm putting this out for you. And this is no longer about me. So if this gets fucking 10 likes or 2,000, 10,000 likes, whatever it gets, fantastic. And I think what I said this yesterday as well. And I think this is something that I just want to end on for coaches that are, you know, listening, is success lies in the metrics you're tracking. Okay. That goes with all things and especially business. But I think even more so now with the anxieties that you're going to get from social and putting out social content as a coach and as someone who's trying to be that for, or build a company or build a presence or build a brand. And what I've seen in the metric that I keep closer tabs on now more than I have in the past is DMs that I get from a piece of content and the amount of saves a piece of content gets. Not for, so I can share it on my story and circle it and say, look how great I am. So many people saved my thing. It's so I can know, look, this video that got zero engagement from a surface level, like likes and how other people are going to judge it. Oh, it got one comment. This guy has 150,000 followers. Who is this fuck? Like, he must have bought all his people, whatever feedback. Again, like, I've dealt with all this. This happens, and no matter what situation you're in. But the only metric that I'm really worried about is how many people sat long enough to watch that video, to swipe through it, to click on Instagram, there are the IGTV link to watch the full length of it, and then went back to press bookmark. Like, how many people saved this for a later date? How many people, and it's not a numbers thing as much as it's just, okay, this was valuable to X amount of people. Relative to, like, there's some posts that get as many saves as likes for me, meaning I didn't get many likes.
You guys familiar with Brian DaCosta?
Yeah.
Client of mine who, when I started working with him, I think he had 30, 40,000 Instagram followers. He started doing these daily workouts. And I mean, yes, he's close to 500, 600,000. I mean, it just never stops growing, but that's what it is. It's literally people are so engaged with him because he's like, Paul, people take their phone to the gym, pull up the workout, and then they watch the one video and they do that exercise. Then they swipe over and do the next exercise, swipe over and do the next exercise. I mean, he's killing himself to making these videos. They take him hours to come, you know, and you do not want to work out with him because he's like, hey dude, hold the camera for me, hold the phone for me. You know, like, I'm like, Jesus Christ, like, do not, you are a cameraman if you're working out with Brian.
Yeah.
And he's a genetic freak that makes you just hate your life because he's like shredded strong and lean. And But that's, I mean, that type of commitment creates, you know, I think that's what some people think. They think they can just take a picture of themselves and then they look good and they should get a following, but it's actually creating value for the people that are going to come back. And that's what I try to do with, you know, my Instagram, my YouTube, my, you know, coming on something like this. Like that's, I don't have to do any of that. I have enough clients and enough like well-being. I don't ever have to put information out. But the thing I always fall back on is like, I can't coach everybody. So I'm trying to create platforms for people that I can't coach to get information and, you know, and have quality information because there's so much crap out there. So yeah, I think you nailed it. That's exactly the way you find what you like to do. And that's what you do with, you know, with putting out and creating value.
Any closing remarks, Alex?
100%. Everything sounds good. I agree with everything.
Is that the Death Star that you're talking into?
No.
It's a blue mic.
Oh, it is a blue mic. Okay. It just looks like the Death Star from my angle.
Apparently Sue got the cool mic.
She did. It's horrible.
I could have got my podcast mic if I knew.
Yeah,
that's all right.
Fancy on
Sue's mic is sick. It's just massive. It's just taking up a lot of real estate on the desk.
It's a power play. She's letting you know who's boss. Is her that seat like 4 inches higher than yours too?
Thankfully, they're on different floors, which she's on the top floor, so that can be representative of whatever you want.
It's another power move. Yeah, her upstairs, and I'm down in the basement with just, you know, tucked away.
Let me guess. She drives the SUV and you drive the sedan.
No. I drive the truck. She drives the Jeep. So at least I've got a little bit of power there.
That's as of 2 months ago, though.
No. I've had the truck for 4 months now.
Okay. Sorry.
But I was in the sedan when she was in the Jeep for a while before I got the truck.
Just wait. She's going to come home. She's going to come home with like a Escalade.
A Yukon. Yeah. I love it. All right, guys. Again, people know where to find Alex, but I'm going to let you both kind of just plug your socials. Where can people find you, learn more about you? And just, again, I can't endorse these two individuals. Obviously, I've dedicated most of my adult life to Alex and going into business with him. And so I can't endorse him enough. So there's that. But
no judgment.
I can't endorse Paul enough as well. So Paul, if you want to kind of start, just hit us with your social and where people can find you, and then Alex, do the same.
I'm always grateful that I have a very unique name. The only people with my last name I know are my relatives. So if you just look up Paul Revella, R-E-V-E-A, you know, my favorite platform in the world is YouTube right now. And then I also do a decent job with Instagram. I try to post, I think I got up to 180 posts last year. You know, my goal was one a day and I got about halfway there.
One a day for a school year, you know?
Yeah. No. And yeah, and if you consider like, you know, not posting on like holidays and stuff, I did pretty good. But then I have a podcast with Lauren Conlon, who's another, you know, fantastic coach and researcher and educator, called Redefine Healthy Radio, where sometimes we talk about science and sometimes we eat a dozen donuts in an hour and almost vomit. So it just depends what we're in the mood to do. We also did a drunk podcast once. That was funny. We did Power Hour. So, you know, that's we're always exploring kind of current content. The other day I had my neighbor over who's an ER doctor and we did a podcast on the coronavirus stuff that he's dealing with. So that's what that's about. And then my website, where it's actually now become a resource. So prophysique.com now has like I said, free at-home training guides for beginners, ebooks on flexible dieting, all free stuff. And we're planning to do some other stuff. So prophysique.com is becoming like a little bit of a hub, you know? So that's me. Pretty simple.
My most used content would be Instagram, and that would be Alex Bush, B-U-S-H __, as Siri thinks I'm talking to her. She continues. And then you can find our website at physiquedevelopment.com with all the fun stuff of articles and training and, you know, all the coaches and the fun stuff.
Yeah. And, as far as Paul's podcast with Lauren, if you guys scroll down, if you guys are listening to this on, Apple Podcasts, if you guys go to the podcast homepage and just scroll down to, podcasts similar to this one, I think if you just swipe over a couple finger links, that podcast should be right there. So I think we have a small crossover of audience who listen to both. So that's actually on the related podcast to this one. So if you guys are interested,
when I get you guys in Tampa, we'll have you on. We're moving. This is my house. This is our podcast desk, but like I said, we got the gym. I got a little podcast studio. I'm not Joe Rogan, but we're going to have like lights. I'm going to try to get it on YouTube. So trying to take that next step forward with the podcast. We really enjoy it.
Yeah, man. We'd love that.
And she's so awkwardly hysterical. Like, it's just the best. She's so funny. She's so oblivious to like the world. Sometimes it's awesome. She thought that South America was where Africa is. The other day I discovered this when we were talking to someone, and she's like, "Oh, what time zone are they in?" I was like, "Well, they're in South America, you know, like within an hour or two." And she said, "Oh, I thought that was over by Africa." So I had to stop the podcast, laugh. So like, that's the kind of, I love talking to her because she really just has, it's smart. She's super intelligent, but she's got this huge gap of just general knowledge.
Yeah. The American education system failed most people, I think. So
it's just Lauren, man.
she thinks Madagascar is South America.
Oh, for sure she does. And I think we flew into Chicago once, and she could not be convinced that it was a lake. She was sure it was an ocean.
It fucking looks like,
because there was beaches and volleyball courts. Yeah, I know. I had to break the news to her.
Broke her heart. Broke her heart.
Love it. Well, if it ain't giving shit to other people and dishing it out, I don't know what else we can do. So thank you guys again for coming on. I appreciate all the time, and I think people are going to get a lot out of this.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Anytime. I got to go buy a Death Star microphone so I can be cool.
Hey guys, Austin here. Thank you again for listening into the episode. It means a lot. If you can, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave the podcast a 5-star review. This does help us grow and be found by others. Also, just wanted to mention, if you guys are interested in free education based around training and nutrition, be sure to check out physiquedevelopment.com/free education, where you will find free downloads, videos, articles, etc. No strings attached. Again, thank you. Chat soon.